KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning. This is Dr. Ann Zink, your host of Line One, your health connection. It's great to have you all here today. And I am in the office, in the studio today with Dr. Jean Quinn. We will be talking about your heart health. We'll be talking about systems of care. We'll be talking about prevention. We will be talking about what physicians are doing across the state of Alaska to help improve systems to help make Alaskans healthier. Really excited to have Alaskans call in and join us in the conversation. You can call us at 1-888-353-5752, or if you're calling from Anchorage, 550-8433, and always email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So go ahead and get started today. I wanted to start by doing a little bit of a public health update. I have actually struggled in this space to be able to know what should I share on a real-time basis versus having our really esteemed guests like Dr. Quinn in today. So I thought I would try something new where just providing a quick update to Alaskans about a few things to focus on. So a couple updates that I had from a public health perspective. I wanted people to know that today begins the beginning of National Nutrition Health Month, actually a big thing from a cardiac standpoint as well. But we all know that good nutrition is a foundation for health, but can be access to good foods can be really challenging across the state of Alaska. So talking to your health provider, talking to your local community, and making sure that you're able to participate and get foods like salmon and berries and moose and the great things that we're able to get here in the state of Alaska. I also just highlight that it is also Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Unfortunately, cancer is the leading cause of colorectal cancer is the leading cause of cancer in Alaska, and the burden is even greater amongst Alaska Native people. Alaska has a 13% higher rate of colorectal than the national average, and Alaska Native population faces double that rate compared to white Alaskans. And just wanted to highlight that screening is absolutely key and can detect cancers up to 60% earlier and reduce deaths by also 60%. Fortunately, a good friend, young in her 30s, recently diagnosed, but it's been great to see the systems of care being able to support her. So make sure that you are getting screened. Also, a very Alaska-specific topic, World Tuberculosis Day is March 24th. Alaska has the highest rates of tuberculosis, about four times the national average, and higher amongst, again, Alaska Native people. So if you have a persistent cough, had an exposure to tuberculosis, touching base with your primary care provider, and just being aware of what's happening. And big shout out to all of the amazing public health teams working to reduce tuberculosis in the state. And then the last two things I wanted to highlight, there's been a lot of conversation about measles, and it has been fantastic that we have such an effective vaccine. The MMR vaccine is about 97% effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths, particularly with those two doses. So really making sure that you are taking preventative measures to be healthy and well. And again, thanks to the public health teams to helping to minimize the risk for tuberculosis in the state. And flu is still around. So if you've been in the emergency department recently, man, it is out there. So good hand washing, taking care of yourself. It's not too late to get vaccinated if you haven't. And if you're having a hard time breathing, seeing your primary. So just a few public health updates. And now we'll dive into the real show. We are just so lucky to have Dr. Quinn here. I've known Dr. Quinn for a long time, initially just as a cardiologist that I was calling from the emergency department, but more recently in thinking about systems of care and how Alaskan systems are working for patients. Dr. Quinn is a practicing cardiologist, the medical director of quality and population health at Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, as well as the chief medical officer for Envoy Integrated Health. And I'll have him talk a little bit more about that later. It's a clinically integrated network. Dr. Quinn received his medical degree from the University of Washington, completed his residency at the University of California in San Francisco, but then also holds a master's in public health from Harvard in public health, as well as a concentration in public health leadership. But Dr. Quinn, we want to get to know you. That is all the bio stuff. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to Alaska, why you chose cardiology. Let's get to know you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here. And thanks for reminding me of where I went to medical school. That's always important. So, I'm Gene Quinn. I'm a cardiologist. I've been in Alaska for almost a decade. Love it here. Fantastic. First came up here as a student at University of Washington. I was a WAMI, part of the WAMI program. I was actually a Seattle-based WAMI, and then I came up here in 2007 for a rotation as a third-year medical student. I had a fantastic attending at Matt Lindemann, who gave me a lot of perspective on what it's really like to be a doctor. You can't really tell that when you're a medical student, what that's like. Enjoyed it. Never thought I'd come back. Went to San Francisco, trained there, but I had made some friends and I kept some contacts, and ended up practicing for a year in between general internal medicine and my cardiology training at Central Peninsula Hospital down in Soldotna. With some fantastic general internists that I really looked up to and thought, wow, these are real doctors, right? They're out there, they're in Alaska doing a little bit of everything. They're not in an ivory tower somewhere doing just one thing, right? Again, left, never thought I'd come back. I had made some friends, and then after I went to Boston and trained in both cardiology and did public health training, convinced me that I should apply at Alaska Heart. And I said, no. I'm like, I don't think, you don't want me. I want to do this system stuff, etc. And he said, well, just come up. And next thing I knew, I was signing a contract and raising my kids here, and I'll hopefully never leave unless I'm deported. You never know. from the state. I am a U.S. citizen.
Great. Well, it is awesome to have you here, and it's interesting to hear your background. You know, I think we think a lot about the WAMI program training Alaskans, which is always fantastic, but I think sometimes we miss the conversation about how it does provide an opportunity for people outside Alaska to see what incredible community, culture, people, systems that we have here, and how it can be a really neat place to work and to be a part of. So it's great to have you here. You know, I oftentimes think about this show as a way to make sure that Alaskans have like a couple things that they could take away. As a cardiologist working in Alaska, if you were to tell patients, Alaskans, like three things that they needed to know about their health that you wanted to make sure that they were thinking about, what would you tell them?
Yeah. That a lot of heart disease is preventable, and with some things that are relatively simple. You got to say it, tobacco is one of the biggest things, right? It's always amazing to me how there's a lot of people that are very interested in their health, very interested in eating right, avoiding processed foods, being vegan, and then still smoke. And unfortunately, the juxtaposition of that is really difficult. So it's hard to stay healthy from a cardiovascular standpoint if you're smoking. Smoking, of course, is a horrible addiction, and it's nobody's fault. I think that there's a lot of stigma about it. It's not a fault. This is an addictive drug that has been masterfully marketed by tobacco companies, and a lot of times you need help to stop smoking. So smoking would be one of them for cardiovascular health. Cardiologists are your friends. We're not trying to poison you with medications. I think that's another big thing that I spend a lot of time on is convincing people that the medications that we're trying to give them are things that are going to help them and prevent them from needing me. I would love to retire because nobody has cardiovascular disease anymore. I think I'll probably be okay, but but a lot of the medicines, particularly there's a lot around statin medications. Statin medications are highly publicized because there's so many people on them, but there's very clear evidence that they prevent heart attack and stroke. Now, whether you in particular need a statin medication and what the risks and benefits are, definitely up to a conversation with you and your provider, and I'm always happy to, my patients know that I'm always happy to talk about that. And what's another one? Exercise is good. I'll be honest, and you can't see me here, but I'm not the big exerciser, right? I'm not running triathlons or anything like that. But doing an amount of exercise that's good for you, just moving your body and doing something other than inside your house, I think that those are the things that that are best to keep you healthy.
I love that. Diet, exercise, and working with your cardiologist, your friends. You know, we have actually some calls coming in as well as a question here. So I want to open up the line to Melanie from Homer. It sounds like you got some questions. Go ahead, Melanie.
I do.
We got you, Melanie. Can you hear us?
Sorry, I had to get the phone thing to find it quickly. But now I have it. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you. You got your online One Your Health connection.
Okay, thank you so much. I am calling because I'm now 70 years old, which I can't believe, and I've thankfully been healthy and active throughout my life in Alaska, done all kinds of things, and not had to think about, oh, I need to exercise today, because that's just been part of what I've done. But I had my youngest child when I was 45, and he now lives in Vermont, so I live in Homer by myself, which is weird and different. But I was just diagnosed and told that I have some atrial fibrillation, I guess that's how you say it, and the medication that was prescribed is Eliquis. And Eliquis costs an insane amount of money for 1 month. It's about $600, even with insurance, with Medicare, with anything. There are some options, and my caregiver did send like a coupon that you can use for 10% off. You have a coupon for 30 days for free, which is awesome. But that's 30 days. And then what do you do the next 30 days? And then hopefully I have lots of 30 days ahead of me. And they don't offer a generic. Even if I went to Canada to get it, it'd be over $500 a month. I'm just really scared about that and why there isn't a generic, or it's crazy that a company can just say, this medication that's needed by all these people that could die, we're going to charge this much. And also, if you know, doctor, if there's ever any cardiologist that does come down to Homer, so I don't have to drive to Saldana or Kingsway or Anchorage.
Melanie, I really appreciate your call. I love that you've been out and active and healthy for 70 years. So great. And your question about cost is part of the reason that I brought Dr. Quinn on, really thinking about how we can access. So Dr. Quinn, what would you share with Melanie?
Yeah. So for this particular case, well, I agree. Fantastic that you're 70 years young. In my book, 70 is still pretty young when you're dealing with cardiology. Atrial fibrillation is a really common disease. One of the biggest problems with atrial fibrillation is the risk of stroke, and then that's why we use blood thinning medications to reduce the risk of stroke. Those blood thinning medications tend to reduce your risk of stroke by around 2/3. The medication that you mentioned, apixaban, the trade name is Eliquis, is one of the favorites, and it's one of the newer ones. Just to be clear, I don't take any money from Big Pharma. I don't actually own any pharmaceutical company stocks. I try to stay as neutral as possible, and I love cheap generic medications whenever we can. Unfortunately, for the anticoagulants, these types of medications, they're relatively, this is a new generation of them, and so they are on still on patent. I would love it if they were cheap and generic. And this particular medication, there are a couple of different options for it. The newer anticoagulants are very convenient. The great thing about them is that you take the same dose every day. You don't have to change the dose. You don't have to wonder how thin is my blood. And you don't have to change the dose based on that thinness. The old tried and true medication is called warfarin, also called Coumadin. That works also well, and it's very cheap. It's generic. The problem is that there's no set dose for one person, and it has a lot of medication interactions and especially diet interactions. The way that it works is with vitamin K, and so if you eat a lot of leafy greens one day and you don't eat them another day, your blood will get either too thin or too thick. And so you need to take lab tests, you need to get blood draws, etc. So it's much more of an inconvenience. it's difficult to balance these things. And, you know, I'm definitely a believer in everybody should get the medications that they need and have the best health that they need, and cost shouldn't be a factor. Unfortunately, we live in a place where cost is a factor. And so if that cost is a factor for these newer medications, you could consider talking to your provider about warfarin. And really quickly, we do have a doctor that comes down to Homer, the great Billy Mayer, Dr. William Mayer. He has done that for many, many years. He flies down True Alaskan himself as the pilot, and he does a clinic down there so that people don't have to come to Soldotna. You're always welcome up here in Anchorage as well.
So, Melanie, thanks for the call, and talk to your primary care doctor about getting connected with Alaska Heart coming down to Homer, because they do fly down there. And I appreciate you mentioning just the cost and the generic. I would also point people back to a month ago, we had an economist on who wrote a book, Why Not Better and Cheaper, and he talked a lot about the patent, and we're hearing from Melanie specifically on what that looks like. We also have another call, which kind of fits a little bit into the kind of the same medication. Can I trust my cardiologist, as well as other things? Another email here. And it really talks about the importance of active lifestyle, but really talks about being able to safely use any specific type of statin, side effects of muscle soreness that's not easily tolerated, concern with blood type for additional statin references, and talks a lot about omega oils and the interest in there. So I just wanted to kind of bring in Bill's email from Anchorage and have you kind of to maybe talk a little bit about statins and kind of your immediate response.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the way that I work with medications, like I said, I don't have any attachment to any particular drug. I try to use cheap and generic medications, and I really try and talk with my patients about the risks and the benefits, right? It's not a, you need to take this medication, well, sometimes it is, but oftentimes it's not, you need to take this medication, it's, this medication is proven in large studies to reduce your risk of heart attack and stroke. It's your choice, right? This isn't jail. It's just the doctor's office. This isn't the doctor's office, but usually you're in the doctor's office. And so it's really a decision that's shared between you and your physician. Some people have some side effects from statins. That is absolutely true. However, most people tolerate statins well, and there's lots of studies to show that the side effect, quote unquote, side effect that you think is from your statin may not actually be from your statin, right? Many of my patients say, I can't take my statin because my knee hurts. That's not the statin side effect. There is a real myositis, so there is a real inflammation of the muscles, and it tends to be the large muscles of the legs, like the thighs, and it's both sides, it's the shoulders, etc. That can really happen, and they're tender to the touch. But joint pain, unfortunately, joint pain is often because that's what joints do after you're aged 30, or at least in my case, that's what they do after you're age 30. But your doctor can talk with you about other options. Oftentimes you can try a different statin. Oftentimes you can actually try the same statin that used to bother you and it won't bother you anymore. There are some supplements that you can take that reduce side effects like CoQ10, there are lots of different options with your doctor. So what I would take away from that is that it's not evil medicine, bad doctor. It's let's talk about it and let's negotiate based on what I want out of my life from taking the statin or not taking a medication, right?
I love that kind of shared decision making. You know, I always talk about walking side by side with patients and what happens there. I wanted to also circle up a little bit onto prevention. I really appreciate how you highlighted tobacco, food, diet, particularly this is National Nutrition Month. I would highlight for our listeners Fresh Start, which is a program as well within the state of Alaska where you can go and you can get smoking cessation support. You can get help for treatment with diabetes. It is free and accessible to all Alaskans. So we'll make sure that's also in our show notes as well. But tell me a little bit more about like what Alaska Heart is doing, cardiologists are doing to really move upstream for prevention, because you said that was a really big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I see myself as having kind of two different jobs and two different roles, and we can talk a little bit more about that if you're interested. But one is that I'm a cardiologist, and so I do doctor things, right, which is taking care of patients both in the clinic and the hospital. You have a heart attack in the middle of the night in, you know, somewhere in Alaska. Your nurse practitioner or possibly nurse or possibly doctor may call me and ask me what to do, and then send you here, hopefully, to Anchorage to fix that heart attack, right? The other thing that we do is really around public health systems, right? That's my other role. And one of the things that Alaska Heart has done is really focus on how do we use when patients come in as an opportunity for prevention, right? Every time that a patient touches the healthcare system, that's an opportunity to for prevention, for public health, for doing something more than just what they came in for. My shoulder hurts. Well, if your shoulder hurts, I'm not going to help you with that, unless it's your statin, but it's not. I have chest pain, etc. Well, how can we also make sure that we are giving you an evidence-based smoking cessation treatment or intervention? So that's one of the things that we've done at Alaska Heart. We started with smoking cessation. We also have a program for lung cancer screening. We found that a lot of the people that qualify for lung cancer screening are people that have been smoking for a long time. People that have been smoking for a long time also oftentimes have heart disease. So we have a lot of those patients that both need lung cancer screening but also have heart disease. That's not usually our area of expertise, is the lungs. However, if we have the opportunity to do that screening, the patient wants to be healthy. They don't want to say, hey, you're the cardiologist, I just want you to take care of my heart, right?
Yeah, and I would love to circle back up on this a little bit more in our second half. We're going to just take a really quick break. I wanted to remind our listeners that you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. You're here with Dr. Jean Quinn, and we invite your questions and comments. We do have some emails coming in, and you're welcome to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org or call in at 1-888-353-5752 or from Anchorage 550-8433. And we'll look forward to continuing more talking about prevention.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Line One, Your Health Connection. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and I'm joined here by our amazing guest, Dr. Jean Quinn. And we're talking about cardiac health. We're talking about prevention. We're talking about systems of care. So it's great to have you here. And again, always invite callers to call in if they've got questions or comments or reflections on this whole process. Our call-in number is 1-888-353-5752 or from Anchorage 550-8433, and it goes, so that's area code 907, and it's email at line1@alaskapublic.org. I just wanted to kind of circle back. We were just before the break talking about prevention and what you all are doing to move upstream. The lungs are connected to the heart, and so doing lung screening in that sense. We talked about smoking cessation, but I just wanted to let you kind of finish off talking about that space and have some emails as well coming in from our callers.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alaska Heart has been very focused on prevention, focused on moving away from just taking care of the individual patient that's in front of you and talking about how do we take care of the entire population of our patients? How do we take care of a community? And I think that's one of the exciting things about practicing in Alaska is really thinking about that from a population level. And you know, Alaska also has a very fragmented healthcare system. I think everybody realizes that. But within those fragmentations, there's lots of those silos that are really high-performing practices, right? I'm biased, but I think that Alaska Heart is definitely one of them. There are many of our friends and many independent practices that are the same way. So Alaska Heart started with prevention just within our clinic and then really started to think about, well, how do we scale this to the larger healthcare system in Alaska? How do we bring more practices in that are also interested in prevention, that are also interested in taking care of patients as a population and as a community? And that's really what spawned my second role, which is with the Envoy Integrated Health.
Yeah, it's great to see the work that you're doing, and that speaks to my heart with thinking about prevention and moving upstream. I love the fact that we've got emails and calls from all around the state. We were just in Homer, but I now want to turn to Jim from Ketchikan. Jim, you're on Line 1 Your Health Connection.
Hey, good afternoon. Morning. Yeah, I was in 2016 put there at Alaska Heart Institute in Providence, and they gave me a pacemaker, and it's just amazing how professional, how quick those people turn to their patients and with the best care ever given. And then the follow-up months, even years later, you get your calls back. Any question you have, they're there to answer them. And I tell you, Alaska Heart Institute is a lifesaver, and Dr. Kramer there is pretty good, and the whole team. I mean, you get to meet all those people, and it's an amazing place to visit. And I wish, you know, the rest of Alaska could have an opportunity just to see it, you know, just for an experience, not on a heart condition, but just to see and learn about what it takes to watch for better health. And that's about it. Good job.
Jim, thank you so much. That really warms my heart as a, you know, as a physician and a partner at Alaska Heart that we did a good job for you. And you know, I actually had the same experience coming from the big city and saying, oh, you know what, like, what kind of clinic is this? Is it a small closet, et cetera? There's a really amazing amount of medical care that is delivered and available in Alaska that you just wouldn't know about. So thank you so much.
Yeah, Jim, and it's great to hear that you're doing well and still getting out and about down in Ketchikan, so it's great to hear things are going well. I want to also turn to an email from Jack in Juneau. He really wanted to know about some of the new weight loss medication and if they can really improve cardiac health for obese and overweight patients. So science is always changing and moving, and this has been a big kind of seismic shift in medicine here recently. Dr. Quinn, what are your thoughts and reflections there?
Yeah, these medications, and a lot of that data is relatively new and just coming out, but these medications are pretty amazing, right? Especially for people that are overweight and have either cardiac risk factors or already have cardiac disease. They really are seeming to decrease the amount of complications from obesity with decreasing weight and taking them. So they're pretty amazing. I would offer that they that weight loss is incredibly difficult. The body doesn't want to lose weight, and that's one of the exciting things about these medications. I would just offer that also exercise and movement is still important. There's really good data that it's better to be overweight and fit than it is to be normal weight and inactive and sedentary. So you have to kind of do both. And I tend to tell my patients who don't decide to use medications, et cetera, to stop focusing on their weight and start focusing on just their activity and just moving around.
I love that. And no commercial interest here, but I'm going to put a plug in for a little YouTube video called 23 and a half hours, and we can put it on our link too. But it's Dr. Mike Evans, and he talks about the fact that you've got 23 and a half hours to do all sorts of things in your life, but the single best thing you can do for your overall health is move and get outside, walk, move. You don't have to, as you mentioned, run triathlons, but doing that, make sure you're not having muscle loss, and which can happen with these weight loss medications. So I see a lot of hip fractures in the ER, so always encouraging people to keep up that weightlifting, keep up that muscle training, but these medications have been a game changer in many ways. While we're working on a couple other questions here, I wanted to circle back a little bit to what you were saying previously about the work that you're doing to integrate systems. You know, I had Melanie calling earlier from Homer saying, I can't afford my meds, yet we were able to hear from Jim in Ketchikan, who was able to come up here. So there's a lot of distances, there's travel, there's time, there's integrating kind of practice of care. So tell us a little bit more about not just prevention, but what you guys are doing in this clinically integrated network, kind of the data that's needed there, and how you're connecting Alaskans to systems that are really working for them.
Yeah. Alaska is a fascinating place, right? It's a fascinating place in so many different ways. And one of those is the healthcare system here. And, you know, we don't have a Mayo Clinic here. We don't have a Kaiser here. We don't have these large integrated systems. And but we do have really great doctors and we have really great institutions. They just don't always talk to each other, right? And that's really the thought process behind Envoy Integrated Health, which is to create a collaborative of physician groups to coordinate care and talk to each other. And as they integrate, and like you said, clinically integrated network, as they integrate, then they can give better care to their patients with that coordination. So you can see records, you can talk to each other. Your doctors are thinking about not just their silo, but thinking about how to take care of a patient through their care journey, between specialists, between primary care and a surgeon, et cetera, between the outpatient setting, the emergency room, the hospitalization, and then a re-entry into the community afterwards. Re-entry. That type of system is what you, or what I think consumers and patients deserve, right? To be able to have that coordinated care. But it takes a lot of infrastructure. It takes a lot of building. And that's really what the Clinically Integrated Network is. That's really what Envoy is building that infrastructure to say, how do we think about taking care of this population, taking care of Alaskans, taking care of our neighbors in a way that we're all working together and that we're bigger than the sum of our parts.
I love that, thinking about these systems of care. I want to turn to another caller. We have Patrick from Eagle River. Patrick, you're on Line 1, your health connection.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Wonderful, Dr. Zink. We've met over the telephone, but my question, I'll precede with a comment. I come from a nuclear family of seven, a mother, father, five children. And over the last 20 years, I've been deeply immersed in the adverse childhood experience study and childhood acquired trauma, which says in one of its findings that if you have exposure to 6 of the 10 studied parent behaviors, your cohort has a 19.5-year shorter lifespan. And in my research on the ACE study, there are a lot of things that afflict people who have had childhood exposure, and yet heart disease is one of them. The study itself was started at Kaiser Permanente to look at an effective weight loss program, and the real blocker was childhood acquired trauma. But I don't hear much about it in Alaska, and certainly I don't hear much about it from the heart community. I am one of two left out of that nuclear family of seven, and when I went back to calculate, there was about a 19-year shorter lifespan for my family, which was heavily exposed to childhood trauma. Do you have any comments about whether that is being looked at by some of the specialists, such as the heart surgeons? Even pediatricians are not real knowledgeable about the adverse childhood experiences that cause a lot of later problems in life.
Yeah, Patrick, I so appreciate your call and highlighting adverse childhood experiences. As you mentioned, that Kaiser study is really fascinating because it was looking at obesity and what were some of the risk factors for obesity. And a physician made an accidental mistake where he asked a patient a wrong question, not the question he meant to ask, which resulted in him realizing that she had had significant sexual trauma as a young adult. And so he started to ask questions a lot more in his obesity clinic to understand, had there been adverse childhood experiences? And as Dr. Quinn was talking about, having having data and systems to be able to look across and understand populations, they were able to partner up with the CDC to look across the Kaiser data and saw, as you mentioned, that if children were exposed to significant traumatic events in childhood, that for all sorts of reasons, as you mentioned, including cardiovascular disease, they were likely to develop additional conditions later in life and have a shorter lifespan. And then there's been more work in looking at prevention. So what are protective factors? A lot of us as kids experience all sorts of adverse experiences, but then there are protective factors like having a strong support network, two adults in your life who care a lot about you. So actually Healthy Alaskans 2030 focuses on how to build preventative factors for Alaskan children in that space. I'd also highlight the book, The Deepest Well, if you hadn't read it, but it's a great book kind of looking at this. But, you know, as an ER physician, this isn't usually my area where I ask a lot of questions, but I have become very fascinated about adverse childhood experiences and bringing this up and thinking about these systems. And Dr. Quinn, I'd love for you to reflect on this and chime in.
Yeah, I think it just highlights how important social care and social determinants of health or social drivers of health are for healthcare, right? When we talk about whole person care, when we talk about what things affect health, healthcare and access to it and the quality of it is incredibly important, and that's what we focus on. But you know, it's not actually the majority of what makes up our health. Some studies would say that it's around 20%, right? It's these social factors and determinants, and that would include, in this case, adverse childhood experiences and those other factors that really affect our health outcomes in ways that we then can medicalize, right? The relationship between between social care and healthcare has always been siloed, but that doesn't make any sense in modern healthcare, especially when you talk about things like value-based care and population health management.
Yeah, I really appreciate you highlighting that 80%, the fact that so much of our health is determined outside of that. And I think it's part of the reason why I'm just really honored to have our listeners listening in today and engaging in the conversation. Again, you're listening to Alaska Public Media. You're on Line One, your health connection. But this is a team sport. And so if this is Jack going for some long walks down in Juneau and taking care of his health, or Patrick working on addressing adverse childhood experiences, these are key parts of cardiovascular health, just as much as Dr. Quinn giving statin recommendations to his patient and being connected to that space. You know, Dr. Quinn, as this clinically integrated network has started to kind of come together, as additional physicians from different perspectives are a part of it, you guys are working better to kind of coordinate care for patients. What have been some of the successes that you've seen in that space?
Yeah, it's been a really amazing journey. So we started this about 5 years ago, and we started it with five physician practices that all came together to for the original collaborative. We just added our 37th practice, and we have over 300 physicians and probably about the same amount of nurse practitioners and PAs and physical therapists, etc. And really, that expanse of that network has allowed us to do things that normally we wouldn't be able to do, right? I think that's the exciting thing. One of the things is really around value-based care. So one of the things that we started is called an Accountable Care Organization, an ACO. And we do that with Medicare. That is a way where you, instead of taking care of patients one at a time and then they're out of your clinic and out of sight, out of mind, you say, this is a population of patients that I'm going to take care of. It's these Medicare patients that are our patients, and we're going to be responsible for not just the cost of their healthcare, but also the quality of their healthcare. And that really changes the game in terms of how you're thinking about taking care of those patients, how you're thinking about healthcare. And it really incentivizes the type of communication and coordination that that's really essential to breaking down these silos. So that's one of our successes. There was no locally. So there are many, many ACOs in the lower 48, about 1,800. Most every state has them. There were none locally in Alaska, so we created the first one just this last year. You always hesitate to say, count chickens before they're hatched, but our data is looking really good, as in we are both meeting quality metrics and possibly saving money, which is really exciting. And then the you know, one of our other big successes is just creating this organization that can help to improve infrastructure. One of those infrastructure things that we've really leaned into is the Health Information Exchange. So Healthy Connect, which is a neutral nonprofit health information exchange here in Alaska, that is one of the pieces that allows your doctors to talk to each other. I think every patient has experienced, well, didn't my doctor send my labs? Or, wait, why don't you know why I'm here? This happens all the time. Patients come and I say, hey, what brings you in today? And they're like, I don't know. My doctor told me to. Didn't you get the records? This is one of the things that can improve that so that we can really have coordinated care.
It's super exciting to hear the ways that things are moving forward. You know, we're just going to head and take a really quick break and come back. I think we have another caller right after the break. But again, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Ann Zink, and I'm joined with Dr. Jean Quinn from the Alaska Heart Institute. You can give us a call at 1-888-353-5752 or from Anchorage 907-550-8433 or line one at alaskapublic.org. And we'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Hello, welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and I am here with Dr. Jean Quinn. It's great to have people in the studio as well as callers helping to provide questions and input. And I wanted to go ahead and circle to Dave in Palmer. Dave, you're on Line One, Your Health Connection.
Hi, thanks a lot. Hey, I got a question for you. What are the implications for not just people on Medicaid, but hospitals, healthcare providers, and other, other people in residents in Alaska, if Medicaid is cut, as we see happening on the federal level? Can you and other programs for healthcare?
Yeah, Dave, I really appreciate the question. Our payment system and healthcare system is quite complex in multiple ways and changes that can make a big difference. But Dr. Quinn, just, you know, turning that over to you for thinking about the impacts for Medicaid or Medicare and kind of the percent of patients maybe that you guys end up seeing that or that's their primary payer source. Any thoughts or reflections there?
Yeah. So access. Access. So when we talk about healthcare, you always think about three things. It's cost, quality, and access. And the joke is choose two. Access is, I think, that the most important thing for that the cuts would decrease. I think that you get a lot more access, obviously, when you have health insurance, but we do have a crisis here, especially in Anchorage, around access to care, and especially for our Medicare population. It's very difficult to get a primary care doctor here in Anchorage if you have Medicare insurance. It's also very difficult to find a specialist that doesn't have a really long wait time. I think that those things will only get worse if other insurances are cut. All of these things, it's a big, gosh, I don't want to say house of cards, but they're all interconnected. And so if you pull one lever, it's going to have an effect on the other rest of the system. So the more Americans that have healthcare insurance, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance, VA, etc., the better, in my opinion. And there are lots of, I have lots of opinions on how to do that on a national level, but I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, you know, and I really just want to highlight the fact that healthy people are cheaper people to the system.
Absolutely.
And so we can look at, you know, cutting or spending money in healthcare, but at the end of the day, it's about how to make patients healthier and how to be healthier overall. And so I think that's what's really exciting about thinking about prevention. That's what's exciting to think about, you know, even on this show here, hearing from you all, you know, just got an email from Lucy, and she talks about experiencing what sounds like very bad COVID, having a very hard time walking, and she started to really begin this journey with her physician, who was her partner, who encouraged her to walk every day. And at first, it was just being able to walk out the front and back door. And she emails in here, currently, as I'm writing this, I'm walking in a beautiful national forest and walk at least 4 miles a day. So, you know, really being able to do that partnership to be able to move upstream for health so that Medicaid and Medicare don't take as much percentage of our budget, but that people still have access. And just like Melanie's question earlier about being access to medication or being access to the emergency department when people have chest pain, or a cardiologist who's able to fly into your community. And so I think that's why I really focused on how can we think about these systems of care so that we can decrease cost and be able to move upstream, and why I wanted you to come onto the show, because I think that you guys are really thinking broadly and deeply about that. You know, into that question, we have another caller, Ron from Fairbanks. Ron, you're on Line 1, your health connection.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Zink, for all your leadership. It's just been terrific, and I'm glad you're still doing it this way. My question deals with AI. It's been my observation that the reason we're doing so much wonderful things in all areas of science and health is that we drill down and we create silos. And the people who are researching have to use English and language in a very specific way. And sometimes those terms aren't the same terms that the public understands. But they have to do that because of the nature of their specialization, and that's happening in science and every place. When you come one level up and start talking to the public, they haven't a clue what you're talking about, because you use your word as you intend it, and they receive it in a way that they have a totally different sense of reference. And it's so complex to wade through that. And if you're a medical patient, sometimes you get referred to another doctor in another silo. And I'm just wondering, what do you think AI can do to maybe help bridge some of these problems of communication and just making things comprehensible for an ordinary patient? Thank you.
Ron, I love your question, and thank you also for your comments. You know, I oftentimes say that public health and healthcare need data to be able to inform, and you make really excellent points that if we're talking in silos and we're talking with language that our patients don't understand, we're not serving our patients. And I could do a whole show on the ways that I think AI is going to radically change both healthcare as well as systems of health. But Dr. Quinn, tell me a little bit what your reaction is to that question from Ron and your perspective on data, on AI, and how to serve patients better.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of different issues that Ron brings up. The first one being around difficulty understanding and jargon, right? The medicine is incredibly complex and it moves really quickly, and there needs to be a way to filter that and have these complex problems be understandable to the patient so that they can make informed decisions. And I think there are some doctors and some providers and some nurses and et cetera that are really skilled in that. There are also people that's part of their job as healthcare navigators, community health workers, that really make that incredibly complex system that is not patient-centered. The way that we practice medicine is not centered around patients. Those community health workers and navigators can really help with that, and help put it into the context of the patient's life, and oftentimes cultural context as well. So I think that there's a lot of value there. Now, can AI do that? Maybe. I don't know. I don't think anybody 10 years ago could say what AI, or they would say what AI couldn't do, but they were wrong. And I don't know. One of my favorite lines from one of my partners is, he says, "I don't really know because I didn't think cell phones would really take off either." like, nobody's going to want this. So I think it's really difficult to know. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And I would welcome the help of AI to have that patient-facing part of interpreting and helping them navigate the system. But I do think that there is a lot, as humans, that we like the human touch and like the human connection. And so as long as we still like that, then hopefully I'll still have a job.
Yeah, and I love the idea of having human-centric technology where humans are kind of double-checking, making sure it's relevant. I also love the idea of empowering patients. And so, Ron, to your point, I don't mind Dr. Google, and now recently it's been Dr. ChatGPT, when a patient looks up their signs and symptoms, because it helps me to understand what their questions are, what their concerns are. And then they're coming in to say, this is what I know about my experiences, this is what I've learned about it, and I can bring to them what I'm seeing, the tests that I'm able to provide, and be able to kind of, again, as we talked about earlier, walk side by side. I also think a lot about how we can look across larger systems. We talked about adverse childhood experiences and how while you have these kind of larger, oftentimes de-identified data sets, we can understand better and what can we do to use the tools more effectively to be able to move upstream, move towards prevention. I do want to circle back to an email that we got from KDP, and I think it's important. She says, you know, I just want to say that if Medicaid is cut for disabled people, they'll be severely impacted. For example, my daughter, she was injured in a car accident as a paraplegic. Her catheters, prescriptions, custom wheelchair, cushions that prevent sores, and medical care is covered by Medicaid. Without Medicaid, her coverage should be severely affected. And, you know, I think that Dr. Quinn and I think a lot about prevention and upstream and these large population numbers, but those populations are made up of individual people like Katie, your daughter, who specifically has conditions that aren't going to go away from walking or from better diet, and that medical care does provide really important key care, and that access is important. So I just wanted to thank you, Katie, for sharing that perspective moving forward. Along those lines, I'm thinking about how do we empower individuals to move forward? You know, I really appreciate your work on the e-health connection and data integrated systems along those lines. We've talked a lot about pulsed forms and people's wishes, particularly elders and their wishes kind of end of life, not just knowing which medication they're on, but really valuing and respecting Alaskans' decisions. Help me understand, as a cardiologist who sees people oftentimes who are older, oftentimes who has complex medical issues, the ways that patients' wishes can be reflected in the chart and what an impact that makes in thinking about systems of care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that every physician wants to do what's best for the patient. And what's best for the patient is not always be really aggressive. Sometimes what's best for the patient is to listen to their wishes. And it's very difficult when somebody is incapacitated for them to tell you their wishes, right? So I think that, as you say, pulse forms are really important. And advanced care planning. Where is that in the medical record, right? And especially in a place like Alaska, where maybe that's on your refrigerator in Kotzebue, and then you got transferred to Anchorage, and nobody has your records. And so I think that that's one of the really important parts about thinking about building that infrastructure for systems of care. And Healthy Connect is one of the most important parts of that. It's really an underpinning. I mean, if we're going to talk about AI, you have to talk about, it's interesting, AI in medicine is really exciting. And at the same time, a huge amount of medical records are sent by fax, right? Like 1970s, 1950s technology. I think in 1970, it cost $20,000 for a fax machine. I think it's cheaper now. But that juxtaposition is amazing to me. And if you'll indulge me, I'll tell you a story. This is actually like a little bit of a hard story for me, so it may be also a hard story for listeners as well. This was during COVID. Actually, this is a really good opportunity for me to also echo Ron's thanks for Dr. Zink's service to the state, especially around COVID. You were an excellent advocate for both the population and for physicians during that time. So it was during COVID. Everything was crazy, right? I think everybody knew that everything was crazy. And I took care of a patient. It was the middle of the night. He got care at a different institution other than where I was there. And For social reasons, we weren't able to get any history. He was found down by family members, but they weren't able to provide us anything with him. He came in, he was totally unresponsive, having a heart attack, and all I know is that he has a very large scar on his abdomen and has a port, which is kind of like a permanent IV in his under his clavicle. And that's something for people that need lots of infusions, oftentimes chemotherapy. And that's all I knew. He was an elder, and we were unable to get records from where he usually gets care. So what option do I have? I have to take care of him, and the only thing that we can do is be really aggressive. So we did. We stopped his heart attack. We put him on a ventilator. We put him on a breathing machine. We put him on all of the life support, and put him in the ICU, where he lived for 3 more days, never woke up from that. And then 3 days later, we got the fax of his medical records that says that he has end-stage cancer and is on hospice and would not want any therapy. And I feel for that patient, and I also feel for all the family members who and providers that helped him with that very difficult decision to stop getting aggressive care. But I also feel for the providers at the ICU team, et cetera, that took care of a patient, thinking that they were doing what they the best they could, but really were not doing what that patient wanted, So that really. If that's your loved one, if that's your community member, you want them to get better care than that. And that's the reason why we build these systems, why we build this infrastructure, is so that that person, just like the people that are sending emails, like my loved one has this thing. That's why we build these systems and we focus on systems, is so that we can have better results, right?
Yeah, I so appreciate that, and it's such a hard place to be. We only have a few minutes, and I want to make sure that we're also getting in some last emails and callers. So, Jim, I'm going to turn to you next. So, Jim from Palmer, we got Jim on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding the use of small-dose 81-milligram aspirin on the recommendation of 2 heart doctors and also of 2 pharmacists in an emergency or as a replacement for Eliquis, simply as a blood thinner for AFib. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I was, I thought that your question was going to go a different direction. Aspirin is not a replacement for Eliquis. So the aspirin is what we call, aspirin is very, is weak in terms of blood thinning. We would call it an antiplatelet. Eliquis is much, much stronger, and it has a very different role, and especially, and it depends upon the indication, depends upon your underlying disease, if it's atrial fibrillation or something like that, but Eliquis is much, much stronger, and aspirin, including for atrial fibrillation, is really, has gone out of favor. It used to be that aspirin was thought of as an okay option for people that are at low risk, but now people either use nothing or they use a stronger medication like Eliquis. So I would personally not recommend that for any of my patients. That may put you at increased risk for stroke.
Jim, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate so many comments, including Donna's, that we weren't really able to address in talking about how heart attacks are different for women, and would love to have kind of ongoing conversation. So appreciate that. You are on Line One, Your Health Connection. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and I have been so honored to be joined by Dr. Jean Quinn. There are so many more topics that we could talk about today. We'll have to have you back on. I want to highlight a couple topics. Next week's show is going to be about nutrition, so I encourage people to take a listen. We'll be having a show coming up specifically about the HIE, and looking forward to building more on that conversation. But I really want to thank the listeners and callers for calling in, Dr. Quinn and his team for the work, but most importantly, our team here, Chris, who is reading my mind on which call to come in first, as well as our incredible production team, including Maddie Rose and Rachel Cassandra, who I left very anxious about what we were going to talk about today, and we were able to pivot and move forward. So I appreciate everyone being here. This is Lane One, and we'll talk to you soon.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians Eastboro and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumigan Corporation. Located in Sandpoint,